All right, everyone, it's finally here. Luxor Switch has been released and is ready to maximize your Equihash hash rate. Luxor Switch has been averaging close to a 5% increase in Equihash hash rate for Luxor's clients, with some periods pushing close to a 10% bump. That is crazy. The Luxor team continues to add value to the mining community and provide superior gains for their clients. Luxor Switch is the place to increase your mining rewards. Switch your hash rate to Luxor today and start maximizing your profitability. We are incredibly grateful for Luxor's continued support of the Hashrate podcast. We would appreciate it very much if you would support the show by supporting them. Head over today to luxor.tech/hashrate and get started mining more profitably. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Hashrate podcast. On today's episode, I am joined by Igor Runets, the CEO of BitRiver. BitRiver is one of Siberia's largest Bitcoin mining facilities, and it is one of the world's most prominent hosting and co-location facilities. Igor has done a phenomenal job of establishing a presence globally, and it was awesome to get to chat with Igor. He obviously has a wealth of knowledge and experience when it comes to mining Bitcoin at scale, and it was great to get to chat with him about what he's looking forward to in the industry and how his business has been built and grown successfully. I always enjoy these types of conversations, and I hope you do as well. If you do enjoy this talk, please do me a favor and leave the Hashrate podcast a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. Throw us a like and a retweet on Twitter. Share this one with Nana. Make sure that everyone gets a little taste of mining mixed into their daily routine, and let's grow this podcast to one of the biggest in crypto. Also, if you haven't already checked it out, I have a link in the show's notes to Difficulty Adjustment, the new weekly newsletter by Hashrate Media. Ambroid and Whale Bear Man are putting their opinionated flair on all of the important Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and mining news, announcements, threads, all of it. So I hope you've already subscribed. If you haven't, head down to the show's notes, follow that link, and get subscribed today to Difficulty Adjustment. All right, everyone, without further ado, let's get on to the show. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Hashrate podcast. I am the Bitcoin Broski, and we've got a special podcast today for you. This guest is someone that I've connected with a little bit on Twitter. He had mentioned something about doing virtual tours of his mining facility, and like my inner geek just freaked out, because for anyone who's ever seen a big mining facility, the size and the scale of it is just magnificent. To imagine putting that in a virtual reality headset and getting to walk through that experience just seemed really cool to me. Aside from that really nifty little thing, this gentleman has built quite the sizable operation. His facility is in Siberia. But without further ado, I am excited to welcome to the show Igor Runets, CEO of BitRiver. Igor, welcome.
Hi, everyone. It's my pleasure.
Let's dig first into that virtual tour. You had mentioned that on Twitter. What's the mindset?
You know, actually, we're doing those tours already for probably a couple of years, because like we have clients from all the continents except Antarctica. So like a very broad client base. And we started doing those tours probably 1.5 years back for our customers who is interested to see the facility, but for some reason just couldn't come to Bratsk, to Siberia. Now, with coronavirus and isolation, when flights are getting canceled, it's getting even more important for our business. That's why we're adding some additional like technical tools and capabilities to this idea, like telepresence robots and stuff like that. But it's not a new idea for us. We understand that our data center is somewhat remote and not everyone can easily come to that data center. That's why like telepresence, virtual tours have been big for us for some time. Previously, it wasn't like fully technically implemented. So like we just connect you with our guys at the data center and they do like a virtual tour for you. So you're online with our technical team on the ground. They walk around, they show you the data center, they show you the facility, and like it works out that way. That's why it requires like special request. It's very easy and quick to arrange, but like it requires a request.
Yeah, it's got to be cool. I mean, especially now, as you mentioned, who knows when people are going to feel comfortable getting on flights and going anywhere, let alone to a place that's remote. If everything was fine, let's say travel was not a problem, are on-site visits, is that commonplace?
I would say all our large clients have been to the facility. They were coming from very different places, from South America, from Africa, from North America, from Asia. So it's not that hard to get to the data center, but obviously it requires some time and commitment.
I think there's often a misconception that, you know, large facility owners are hesitant to give their location. So how do you view that? I mean, with regards to having people come in, but what are your thoughts around security and making your location known?
We believe that for us, it's important to be fully transparent and open to our clients. If you Google, you will easily find our exact location. So we believe that like proactive and comprehensive approach to the security of the site is more important than trying to keep it hidden. Because like it's impossible to hide 1 megawatt facility from anyone. Right. People who want to find, they will find exact location of the data center. That's why we spend quite a bit of time thinking about comprehensive security, hiring like security agency, hiring like our own security guys to the site, pulling all the cameras like and stuff like that. We believe that comprehensive, proactive security is more important than like any attempts to keep the location hidden from anyone.
So Igor, when did the facility in Bronx come online?
You know, there is quite a bit of story behind that. So initially, Bronx facility was a part of a broader Bitcoin mining fund. But for some external and internal reasons, around April 2017, we decided that facility will not be a part of the fund anymore. We stopped sending any money from the fund to that facility. It was related to geopolitical situation at that moment because our fund was primarily for American investors. And in early 2017, I got the facility which wasn't completed, and I spent over 6 months to find the ways to keep that facility alive and switch from like trying to survive to start growing. And I did that, and soon after that, geopolitical situation in some regard has changed, and I felt very lucky that I was keeping the facility alive. I was pushing it to grow, and I realized that it was a right decision. So the facility came online in mid-2018.
You've got an interesting background for someone who ends up in Siberia mining Bitcoin, right? So when it comes to your journey, how did that transition from Stanford GSB to mining Bitcoin in Siberia occur?
All right, that's an interesting question. So to understand that, I will probably explain my background before GSB. So from 2007, I was in business of implementing large-scale industrial projects for like some largest companies in Russia, like gas industry, oil industry, metallurgical industry, and building on that experience, in 2010, I launched a data center business in Russia, traditional data center business. And that business was developing. I was getting some clients, some interest from the United States, from Europe. And in 2015, actually, before getting to GSB, I got interested in Bitcoin mining. So I launched my first small facility in my hometown of Yekaterinburg in 2015, as I said, before getting to GSB. And for me, it was just kind of a small experimental thing to try. But like after getting to GSB, so idea of getting there was like, I got some very large interesting clients from the United States and was trying to understand how business is done there to grow my telecommunications, my data center business. But after getting there, I got much more serious about decentralized assets, about blockchain and mining as a critical part of a blockchain industry. And at that moment, I decided to grow my mining operation business. So it was kind of transitional point for me from traditional telecommunications to blockchain world. That being said, my telecommunications business, my data center business is still alive. It's kind of another part of my group of businesses, if I can say this way. But like currently, mining operations, mining data centers, blockchain business is the largest part of my business.
the mining facility that you have going right now, which percentage of it is used to self-mine as opposed to host or co-locate?
I would say like 99% of the facility is going to co-location, even more. I have like some insignificant number of miners in that facility. That kind of plays back to the time when I was trying to keep a facility alive and finance it from my own pocket. So I had like a significantly large quantity of miners in 2015 and 2016. But like after data center stopped being a part of the fund, I had to find a way to finance it. So I sold all my miners and decided to focus on mining data center industry instead. So like I would say the facility entirely designed and designated for co-location mining.
What are some of the challenges that you face with a co-location that self-mining doesn't account for?
That's a great question. I would say the biggest challenge is quality of servers. Because when you're mining for yourself, there is no one who is keeping you accountable, who is like requesting high quality of services. But when you are offering services to someone else, you need to make it very high quality, very transparent, and make sure that your customers are happy with the experience. So my background in traditional telecommunications obviously helped me. But like, you know, in traditional data centers, you're not managing like 50,000 of devices. So it's kind of new. It's new to the industry. It's new to the telecommunications and data center industry as a whole. So as finding that way to serve like tens of thousands of machines and keeping their clients happy to resolve all the like requests and incidents as quickly as possible, like in a few minutes, in 10 minutes, it's a huge challenge. And I believe it's very new to the industry. It's very new to data center industry as a whole, not only to blockchain mining industry. I would say this is the biggest difference and biggest challenge of creation a data center as compared to self-mining. Obviously, all the challenges of self-mining still persist in collocation business model. We still need to go and find the cheapest possible electricity to survive, to help our clients to survive the challenging times when profitability is not that great. So I would say all the same challenges with self-mining, but additional challenges related to providing the best possible user experience to our clients.
Yeah, anytime you add clients to the mix, it always creates that extra layer of complexity. You mentioned your clientele are global. So from a business development perspective, how are you casting that net? How do you go about filling your facility with miners?
That's a great question. So I would say part of that is my personal network, which was already kind of global at the moment when I got into Bitcoin mining, because like my previous telecommunications business was focused on providing telecommunication services, data center services to American, European clients who would establish as a point of presence in like new regions like South America, Africa, Russia, Middle East, Asia. So I already had some network built in those regions. But at the same time, I would say that different industry conferences were a big deal for us. And also, you know, some people looking for cheap energy, they understand that Siberia probably has the cheapest electricity in the world. They come there, they ask local people, they ask energy companies, and all of them are being like introduced to us. So I would say couple of things here. So my personal background, the fact that we are largest in the region and people are trying to find like data centers in all those regions would anyway come to us. So like all of those factors help us find and close deals with global clients. I believe that Bitcoin mining industry is kind of unique because people care a lot about their cost of doing business. So they are very open to exploring new regions. And when they kind of take global view on the industry, they see immediately that Siberia has the cheapest green sustainable electricity. So they come there and they find us. So for probably last 1.5 years, I didn't spend much money on PR, on marketing, and still was able to find like quite a bit of clients, and I fill my facility with large international clients.
So I guess a two-part question. As a facility, how do you package that all-in power price that you're selling? And on the client side, what should they be looking for, if anything, outside of just the cost?
Good question. So for our clients, to make it easier for them, to make it more transparent, we package all the components in one price. So when a client is paying us for kilowatt hour, everything is included. It includes all the local taxes. It includes maintenance. It includes security. It includes internet access. So like everything is built in the price of kilowatt hour, which makes it easier for our clients. We're not charging anything on top of that. No, like paying for losses of electricity, very common amongst like Chinese miners. No adding any additional taxes and stuff. We just provide all in service to our clients, and we guarantee uptime to our clients so they can be sure that we provide reliable servers, guaranteed uptime, and no additional payments. Kind of answering to the second part of your question, I would say that beyond the just cheapest electricity, clients need to do like some due diligence, because like there were very bad situations both in Russia, in different countries, when people looking for like cheapest electricity and not doing any due diligence, not checking basic information about their counterparties, they oftentimes come to some shady data centers who not paying for electricity, who is not connected to the grid in a proper way. So using like a wrong way to pay for electricity. For example, some time ago in Russia, it was very common to pay for electricity as a residential users instead of industrial users, and advertise that as an industrial data center to your clients. So in all of those cases, like equipment of our clients would be in danger, because there were cases in Russia, in other countries, when like illegal data centers were like shut down, equipment was confiscated. So I would say it's really important to look for legality of the operation, transparency of the operation. And I would say we should not like undermine the importance of that. We should look for sustainability of the operation, because like when you look at us like coal firing power plant, it's just like obvious that it's a very dangerous and bad for local people, for environment as a whole. So it's just bad to see those, you know, coal fired power plants with black smoke on top of them. It's just kind of crazy. We allocated in Siberia and using like green renewable hydropower for our operations. So there is no like environmental impact on local people, on our environment in Siberia, in the world from our operations. So I believe like sustainability, legality, transparency are the crucial pieces.
There's obviously been a push for mining in Siberia. The other CIS countries as well have seen a big uptick. What are your thoughts on how mining in some of the other CIS countries that are gaining in popularity right now versus mining in Russia?
You know, I will answer from slightly different angle. So first of all, what is the main industry in Siberia in addition to Bitcoin mining? The main industry, the key industry in Siberia, in Irkutsk region in particular, is aluminum production. This is a crazy power consuming industry. Probably like around 65-70% of the cost of producing aluminum comes from electricity cost. So all of those huge, largest in the world plants were built in Siberia because it has access to reliable, safe, sustainable, and cheap electricity. So when you check for all other countries, you need to ask yourself a question. Why those power-consuming industries were not built in those regions? Why they are not in those countries? And answer will come to your mind. In some places, you will understand that electricity production is not scalable you can get some volume of electricity cheaply, but if you grow, the price will go up significantly. In some other regions, you will understand that it's not sustainable from ecological point of view. You will understand that it's not sustainable from a price point of view. So different reasons in different regions, but if you see like a global picture where all the largest industrial power consumers in the world are located, you will immediately identify the cheapest and more sustainable regions. Because like people in aluminum have been like looking for cheapest electricity for decades before blockchain emerged. So they have done all the preparatory work. So it's easy to identify the region. So we kind of bring in expertise from traditional industries and kind of simple, but it's not that simple to put kind of all the pieces together and get cheap electricity in all of those places. But like overall kind of we're building on traditional industries as well.
I think at least one of the big benefits of Bitcoin and blockchain is that, you know, in my mind, there's not really much new under the sun. Every business that's currently being built in one way, shape or form has been built before. It's finding that previous example and learning from those past mistakes or, you know, the lessons that you're to take. So it's very astute of you to say that. Also, a very politically correct answer to that question. I don't know, like being in mining and having these conversations for, you know, the better part of 2 years, it often can be that people will do anything for cheap power. But on the flip side of it, to me at least, it seems like there's cheap power everywhere. Like if all you wanted to do was find 2 cents per kilowatt hour, you could find that. It's just what are the other counterparty risks associated with it?
Exactly.
So when you're looking right now at the halving, what are your thoughts on this halving and its significance for Bitcoin?
Good question. I believe that it puts a lot of pressure on like economical sustainability of the mining business. So it underscore once again that mining is an industry which is all about operational efficiency. It's all about how do you make your operation as efficient as it possible. Because like look on what is happening around like halving. All the miners with high electricity prices and not that efficient equipment, they will go like offline, allowing people with cheaper electricity, with more efficient machines, keep operating. So mining itself is all about like efficiency of your energy source and efficiency of your machines. Such events as high Bitcoin price depression or halving, all of those events are like again and again and again reiterating importance of getting all of those pieces correct and paying a lot of attention to being on the very bottom of the price curve. Because like when times are good, when margins are high, when profitability is attractive, people stop thinking about saving like on electricity, on saving like on the operations cost, on construction costs. And sometimes got in the regions in or building stuff which makes no economical sense from like a fundamental perspective. When you remember once again that Bitcoin mining is about like being on the very bottom of the price curve in the industry. So I believe like it plays again towards like making business more efficient, like reminding people that all the components like should be taken care of and price should be like minimized and still be sustainable. So I believe like halving would make industry more sustainable and more efficient. So,
you know, one of the things that I've talked about on other shows, met with different people in the industry, and I'd love to get your opinion. There are a lot of financial instruments that are now popping up around Bitcoin mining. So, you know, hash rate futures contracts and other lending services. What's your opinion on these products being offered?
I believe those products create like necessary infrastructure for proper sophisticated mining operations. At the same time, like you need to have like lending infrastructure in place to make it scalable and institutional grade operation. You want to have like difficulty swaps, like price futures. All of that would allow industry to develop and grow faster. At the same time, it's important to understand that like uncontrollable, like crazy quick development of those instruments might create like unhealthy situations when kind of people sell too much price futures, like difficulty swaps, and when like black swan event emerges, they would just go down because there's a lot of damage to the industry. So I believe that all of those pieces are important parts of the overall blockchain infrastructure, but it's dangerous to the industry if those pieces of the infrastructure develops in uncontrollable and unsustainable way.
When you hint at the unsustainability or the lack of control, do you think that regulation solves some of those issues?
No, regulation would not solve those issues. Wall Street already showed us that regulation is not solving those issues. I believe like people should solve those issues. They should check where they're going to get those swaps, those futures. How reliable is the counterparty? Is there like centralized mechanism, like a broker, like a difficulty swap broker really important here? Or people should do business in a decentralized way and just find the proper counterparty for themselves to hedge a price or hedge a difficulty. I believe like centralized institutions or regulation would not solve the problem. We already saw that. But at the same time, we also saw that uncontrollable, like explosive growth of a derivative industry might be dangerous, might cause crises. So like it's more place towards accountability of people who are buying those swaps, those futures, and thinking a lot about the counterparties, who is a natural hedge to what they're trying to hedge, and doing business in a accountable way.
Okay, so you mentioned the market volatility, and I've got to ask, we probably have witnessed the most volatile swing in the price of crude oil ever. So how has that impacted your business, and how has it impacted just the Russian economy overall?
Good question. So Russian economy traditionally depends a lot on oil prices. Now when oil prices are going down, Russian ruble, Russian currency is also going down, and everything is getting cheaper in Russia, including like electricity, including labor. So for some businesses who export services, export goods, it creates a very good growth opportunity. We are included, so almost all our costs, expenses are nominated in rubles. Electricity, rent, labor, and cost of all of that nominated in dollars is going down right now. So it's good. And another question here, how people, how mining operations, how like people exporting services and goods overall would handle that. If people just build like low ruble exchange rate in other calculations and tying contracts, like long-term contracts based on that, like for 1 year, for 2 years, they might be creating like a lot of danger and risk for their businesses, because like oil price is low right now, but we don't know what is going to happen next year. Price might go up significantly, and so those people are locked into like 2 years contracts. That's why it's really important to hedge not only like Bitcoin price or difficulty risks, but also foreign exchange risk. And we're doing that. So it's really important to remember about those risks when exchange rate is going down, when prices are getting more attractive. You also need to understand and remember that, all right, it's great right now, but what would happen next year and hedge for those risks?
Igor, as we get close to wrapping things up, I'm incredibly bullish, and I'm sure you are as well, on the future of Bitcoin. And even though the economy is what it is right now, and we're all dealing with COVID-19 and all of that, it's really difficult not to be positive, right? There's so many good opportunities that I think are presenting themselves right now. Getting the ability to talk to business leaders such as yourself, it just further solidifies that. So one thing that I'd love to know, from where you sit right now, with the information that you have, what's one thing that you're looking on the horizon for that you're really excited about right now?
Actually, not one, but a couple of things. So first of all, I believe like in current crisis, Bitcoin can easily prove itself as a like legit, proper store of value and attract even more like institutional investors and start gaining like institutional attention from traditional industry players. So this is kind of very important. And second of all, I believe that it brings more and more attention to Russia as a like capital of Bitcoin mining, and I am very excited about my country because I believe like there is just a huge potential in Russia, like hydropower, cold climate. So what I'm excited about, first of all, Bitcoin mining getting more popular in Russia, and Bitcoin itself, digital currencies are getting more like attention from traditional like financial institutions, from the traditional money managers and traditional investors.
Awesome. I think that is the best note to end on. It's great to hear that sense of pride, and I'm excited to see the continued growth in Russia, in the United States, in everywhere that's supporting this Bitcoin infrastructure. And I like that there's that little competitive nature that comes out in everyone that is in mining. You know, Igor, I am so grateful that you were able to make the time to join me for this conversation today. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much.
Hey, we'll have to do it again sometime. I'd love to have you on again in the future. And you know, to the listeners out there, I am incredibly grateful for your guys' continued support. I know that you could be doing anything with your day and you choose to spend a part of it with us. So thank you very much. And until we talk to everyone again very soon, hope you all take care and stay safe. Thanks for tuning into the Hashrate Podcast. We appreciate your continued support. Please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. And head over to Twitter and give us a follow at Hashrate. That's at H4SHRate.